Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine.
It is Julie Calamine and it's both of us, Phil. How nice.
I know. It's great. You were off last week doing something fun, weren't you?
Yeah, I was off fishing, but it wasn't quite as much fun as it might have been. Hot.
Oh.
And the fish weren't nibbling much.
Oh, so then you don't mind saying where you went if you didn't catch any.
Yes, no one needs to go to the Missouri River near Craig, Montana this week or next week.
Was it just the water temperatures or something else going on?
I think it was mostly the warm water temperatures. Oh, and it's weedy there right now, too, so it's a little bit hard to catch anything. Enough said, though, on that. It was good to get away and nice to be home.
Good to have you back. We had an exciting weekend here. I don't know if you got out at all, but Deb and I went to a place that I'll leave undisclosed because it's yet another place she says she'll never go back.
Bushwhacking, I heard.
Yeah, bushwhacking, but we also had some great berries. Another reason not to talk too much about where it was.
There you go. Never, never divulge your best berry picking spots.
No, especially the late season ones. Speaking of being out of doors, what is this smoke? It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I've heard various versions of what the index was yesterday, but all of them are pretty much unhealthy. So
very much so. And if you go to the Idaho fires site, you'll notice that there are fires all around us, and that is making for super smoky.
Yeah, so be safe and careful outside. If you do go outside, make sure you don't contribute to any more fires. And at this point, probably just stay inside and try to breathe filtered air.
Yes.
The forecast coming up for today is smoke, a high of 83. I think it's going to at least tamp down the temperatures a little bit, it looks like. A low of 55, so it'll keep them up at night. And we've got smoke or haze in the forecast for today, tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday night, Thursday. And it looks like we might get a brief reprieve Thursday night with a 20% chance of showers. And then Friday, it's back to haze. So that's haze, the week ahead.
Haze and smoke. Well, I guess I'll take that over a hurricane.
I don't know. Category 5 is a pretty nasty hurricane.
Scary.
So
that's right. Because I've forgotten to mention it, we are listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio. And for those of you who aren't able to hear the entire show this morning, know that you can always come to our online, krfy.org, and listen to the podcast later.
Well, we have a great show this morning from the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. We have Kathleen St. Clair McGee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
Doing well.
Great to have you. You're someone who does work in the outside, and I imagine the smoke has an effect on that.
It does. It really does. A lot of the animals seem to almost shut down, but hey, they still have to get out. They still have to find food. The animals in the care for the rehab center, they just kind of take it in stride.
Take it easy, like they've recommended us to do.
Yes.
That's right.
Nature knows best.
That's right. So tell us a little bit of your background and how you came to help to found and run the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation.
Well, my background, I am a former zookeeper and a member of the American Association of Zookeepers. I'm also a current member of the International Wildlife Rehabilitators Council, as well as the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. Those are the two national professional rehab organizations. There's approximately 5,000 members. And then as far as how I started this, I moved up to this area in the early 90s. And with my background, of course, looking for a job, there was a zoo in Spokane that was looking to relocate to North Idaho. They had not yet done that. Still needed to find a job. The animal shelter had just opened. I connected with the founder and of course was hired. So I was the third staff member there. Because of my background, I received all the phone calls for baby birds, baby squirrels, you name it, I got it. And right there is a common misconception that, you know, a wild animal can be treated the same as a domestic animal, and that a wild animal, a zookeeper knows everything there is about the native species. And those are just common misconceptions as far as the understanding. But that really got me understanding and looking around going, yeah, you're right. There are no facilities to provide care. And actually, even at this point in time, we are still the only organization in the entire panhandle that has the permits for birds and mammals.
And a zoo, I imagine a zoo wouldn't even be able to take in injured wildlife.
Correct.
Even if we had one here.
Correct. It's a very specialized profession. I mean, it's very specialized, as is zookeeping, as is the care of domestic animals. So it's they're all animals, but it's very unique. It's just as when you go to the hospital, there's very distinct definitions.
So let's step back a little bit, and for the listeners who aren't familiar with the organization or the facilities, tell us a little bit about what the mission and the scope for the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation is.
Well, the mission of American Heritage Wildlife Foundation is to work towards the conservation of local wildlife through rehabilitation of the injured and orphaned and providing community education. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, all right, bring me an animal that needs help and I'll release it, but bring me that animal that needs help and I'll release it. And let me talk to you a little bit how you can cohabitate with the native species. Let me talk to you a little bit how you can humanely evict that animal if that animal is causing damage. Because live traps, contrary to popular belief, are not humane. Trapping and relocating an animal to a new habitat is not humane. And actually, in some states, it's illegal because the statistics have shown that, no, the animal will not survive and it will suffer horribly.
And is that because it finds itself in a new surrounding or because of physical trauma or both?
Yes. And imagine yourself, you know, we're all in North Idaho. We're very independent, very self-spirit. We enjoy where we live, but imagine just this great hand reaching down, picking us up and dropping us into the middle of New York City. Now what?
All I can think of is Naked and Alone.
Yes.
The show.
Oh, the show. I'm glad you clarified that.
It sounds like a really bad version of that for animals.
Right. Ooh. Yeah, because you're not only do you have to try and find food, but you have to try and find shelter and water. And all at the same time, you have the territory owner basically saying, what are you doing in my space?
So as a rehab facility, then you're educating the individuals that bring things in and the public, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But tell us about the work you do with the animals when they come in.
As I said, you know, being a professional rehabilitator, it is not something that, oh, I raised up puppies or kitties or horses that you can just pick up and do. Or someone who says, oh, I'm very passionate about wildlife and I watch all the nature shows. You're not necessarily going to be able to fit in for that either. Because it is very demanding, it is excruciating and heartbreaking, but it is also very rewarding and you get to see some miraculous things.
And not every animal makes it to rehab.
That's true. Not every animal makes it to rehab. And that's the other side of the sword, if you will, of rehab, that we live in a community that is so wonderful about the animals. We get phone calls from very tenderhearted members that just love the animals and they do the right thing right away. They research and find out where to take the animal. If we're not available, if our volunteers are not available, then they do the right thing and they keep the animal calm and quiet. And then they proceed to call us the next day. Other folks, they unfortunately believe that the internet told them how to take care of the animal. So they proceed to break Idaho state law and keep that animal to try and rehab that animal. And they proceed to keep that animal as they would their domestic animal for days, weeks, months. And then they call us when there's a problem. Or they bring us the animal after there's a problem.
Are there no wild animals that people can keep in their homes? Is it illegal across the board?
In Idaho State, yes.
So if they do the right thing, they bring you the animal. And I'm sure it varies in each situation. Describe a sort of average stay, if you will. How long do they stay with you and what kind of physical or behavioral rehabilitation are you working with them on?
That's again, part of the specialty of wildlife rehab is trying to maintain and keep that physical and that mental and that emotional separation between humans and wild. So you try and address that. But as far as the duration of stay, it's anywhere from, okay, I just need a couple days to recover from striking into the window, or I need several months of care. So as a rehabilitator, you're basically one part medic, one part biologist, one part surrogate mother, one part detective, because when you have an animal that comes in, you have to, in a moment, be able to identify where that animal came from, why that animal is in your care, what happened to that animal, and this is all before you even lay hands on the animal. Because when you lay hands on an animal, especially a wild animal, they have a condition that is directly related to stress called capture myopathy, and that can extremely shut everything down. So all their systems shut down. So you need to be able to respond quickly and rapidly, but appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And Kathleen, is there an economic factor in your decision making? Do you sometimes have to look at an animal and say, this is just something our facility can't afford to
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And that's a very real question, because of the 5,000 or so members across the nation that do this for a living, that are have dedicated their lives to this, that is an everyday question, because that's very true. The majority of those organizations are completely community supported, absolutely community supported. There are no federal, state, or county funds that give to the organization. So it's all out of community-based. It's all out of community support. Many of these people, they just contribute their own funds toward this. So when an animal comes in, that's a real question. A lot of times the vet clinics will help out if they can, but then that puts the burden on the vet clinic to fund it. So it's a real catch.
Mm-hmm. Are there any species you focus on? Or you have an area of expertise that others refer animals to you?
Well, there's approximately half a dozen facilities of nonprofit organizations in the entire state. And as earlier stated, we're the only one in the Panhandle. So as we're the only facility in the Panhandle, we catch everything. We have the United States Fish and Wildlife Migratory Bird Division permits to care for the majority of all the bird species. We also have Idaho State Fish and Game permits to provide care for the non-game mammals as well as the birds, and of course reptiles and that type of thing as well. So we do work closely with Mystic Farms in Sagal, who is exclusively the white-tailed deer fawn. And then there's also Bird of Prey Northwest in St. Mary's, who is exclusively raptors. And so we work closely with them, especially for long-term cases on them. But we catch everything from seagulls to turtles, coyotes to weasels to squirrels to, I mean, you name it, it's incredible. We had 121 individuals last year from 38 different species.
Are there some you see more often than others?
Squirrels are common. Crows and ravens are common. Those are the robins, of course. And then there's always the mix up. Is it a swallow or is it a sparrow or is it a starling or all the type birds all get confused, even though they're very distinct on their diet.
The LBJs.
Yes.
The little brown jobs.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm hearing that the range of size of animals varies. I'm wondering, what is the smallest animal and what has been the largest animal you've been able to help?
I would say the smallest was probably, weight-wise, it's probably a tie between either one of the little bats, a little bat baby that we had, or a juvenile calliope hummingbird.
Oh, so that would be tiny.
They are they're only a few grams. And then the largest that we've had, it's either going to be the coyotes or like the ospreys, I would say.
So no bear.
Not as of yet. We're very blessed to have Idaho State acknowledge that a black bear rehab facility in the Panhandle would be beneficial and advantageous. So we've actually received their permission to, yes, go ahead and construct those enclosures, which is wonderful, because usually in about late fall, we get phone calls from Washington State, Oregon State, sometimes indefinitely around here. Hey, there's a sow that was killed. She has some cubs. Can we bring them to you? They need help. They're not going to make it through winter, and we have to decline because we don't have the facilities.
But you're building it, so they probably will come then.
Yes. As soon as we get it built, they will come. And any information, we have many, many programs as far as fundraising. Everything from shopping at the grocery store. We're just establishing something with Chewy.com to have us be one of their partners to receive some of the funding, eBay, Amazon, all those programs we have on our website.
So you bring up a good question about enclosures. You must have quite a variety of facilities to be able to accommodate such a wide variety of animals.
We do. We were very blessed to receive some grant funding several years ago, and we were able to construct a 24 by 32 flight aviary.
Mm-hmm. And then for the coyotes, you keep those separate from the squirrels, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. Yeah, they have their own 30 by 20 yard. And as with all of our animals, it's important to keep that visual barrier, keep them separate from, again, keep them separate from the human factor. You know, we go through, all of our volunteers go through special training and that type of thing to make sure that barrier of human and domestic and wild is always stays there. You know, a lot of folks, oh, I can pet the deer. Don't do that. That's bad for the deer. That's bad for you. Keep that wild line wild.
Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And this morning we're talking with Kathleen St. Clair McGee, founder and board of directors president of the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. And I want to continue on this visual almost exploration of the facilities with the various enclosures. How many enclosures do you have?
That I've never actually stopped and counted. When you say, Julie, say you were to find a, I don't know, let's just say, I don't know, pick an animal.
I would like to find a
big brown trout.
Yes, that yes. I would like to find.
That wouldn't get rehabbed. I'm sorry. That would be dinner. No,
that would be impossible. But what if I found an injured quail? I have them in my yard.
Okay.
So California quail.
Okay. So you have quail in your yard. You would proceed to call us and we would guide you how to get to our facility, because as much as I would like to say we have a wildlife ambulance to send on to pick them up, the resources just are not there for that, be it volunteer-wise or actually having the ambulance. So I would guide you on how to get to our facility. Our facility is not a sanctuary. It is not a open to the public facility.
Hang on, I want to change my animal. I also have a family of kestrels in my hayfield. So what if I found an injured kestrel? This is going to get more interesting.
Can I have both of them?
Yes.
Still no ambulance, I suspect.
No.
So unfortunately, there's still names. But what we would do is we would guide you. Obviously, with the quail, we're not so much concerned about your personal safety, but we would still guide you on how to safely capture those animals and secure those animals for the transport. On the kestrel, we would also make sure we would guide you and make sure we would explicitly detail how to safely get a hold of that kestrel. Before we would recommend capture, we would go through a couple of questions to identify, does that animal really need to be rescued? What are some of the symptoms that you're seeing? What are you visualizing when you're looking at this? To identify, do we really need that animal in rehab? Because that's a lot of times, that's often a mistake that people make is they, oh, look, you're hurt, and they pick them up and unintentionally kidnap. So you bring your quail and your kestrel to our facility.
Not in the same box, I would
no,
guess.
No, please no, because the kestrel would have supper. Because kestrels are. So you would bring them out to our facility. We do have a master intake room, which is where we would do our initial exam. We do have the capacity to do minor triage. So we can do minor medical. Obviously, if the wing was broken on the kestrel, and they're a large enough bird that medical attention can be taken care of in a vet clinic. When you have a little hummingbird with a broken wing, even if you have the best nano surgery technology, there's really no way to establish that. But when you have a kestrel, broken wing, then we would see that, address any of the other issues that may be taking place, such as infections going on or undernourishment, what are the underlying causes that may have caused that break, that type of thing. You would sign the documentation of where it was found and that kind of thing, because what we like to do is return that animal back to their home territory. As we were discussing earlier, that home turf is key to survival. That's one of the many, many keys in survival. Then along with our main intake room, we do have several exterior enclosures, several aviary spaces, that type of a thing. So,
yeah. So you've got an interior facility for getting everybody squared away, and then they might end up outdoors when they're feeling better.
Yes. So exactly.
You would keep the kestrel and the quail in separate aviaries.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, we're working now to expand our intake room so that we can actually have them in separate rooms, because we don't want that quail to constantly be hearing that kestrel calling out.
No.
Because that's an extra stress. You might not be able to see them, but you know they're there, and that's not right. Or if you have a predator and prey mammal species, they're going to smell each other. So that's also something that we're working on obtaining additional funding. There's always projects that need community support, always projects that need additional funding.
So you've mentioned vet services. Do you work with local area vets, or do you have veterinary expertise on staff?
I wish we had a vet on staff, but as previously stated, because I'm a professional rehabilitator, I have the ability to work with all of the nation's professionals, as well as review the professional journals that come out and read those documentations. So I'm able to keep abreast on some of the current medical things that are taking place, which that's kind of authorizes me and allows me to have that knowledge base to provide the minor triage treatment that's required. There is actually only one clinic in Sandpoint that has gone through all the hoops and signed all the pieces of paper to allow them to provide care for the bird species. And bird species are very specialized. It's again, it's not like I'm working on my dog or my cat. To work on a bird, it requires a lot of extra knowledge base. So the one clinic in Sandpoint that does work on the birds is North Idaho. Mm-hmm. But many of the other clinics in Sandpoint feel comfortable and confident in, okay, this squirrel just get hit by a car. I'm right here at this particular clinic, Fry Creek Clinic, say, can I bring it in? And of course, they're going to do the right thing and try and help that squirrel.
So animals come in, and some of them are good candidates for rehab, and some yes. require some medical attention. And some may, you may not be able to do anything other than euthanasia, I would assume.
Correct.
There's a category of animals that might continue to live with their particular problem, but not be eligible for release. What do you do with those?
That is where we're bound by state law and our permits. From Idaho State, we are bound to either release a wild animal or euthanize a wild animal. Under the Federal Migratory Bird Act, we have the capacity to, if we deem that a particular raptor is of the right temperament and we locate a facility that has the proper permits, then we can go through all the pieces of paper and go through all the process to try and get that particular raptor to that particular facility that has that particular permit to provide long-term care for that particular animal. And, but it's all based on that individual animal, because just because I'm in alive doesn't mean that the life of captivity is the right life for me. I think that was a Disney song somehow. But because it goes back to, like I said, that capture myopathy, that stress. This is an animal that has been raised up to dislike humans. This is an animal that's been raised up to be wild. And now all of a sudden I'm confined. That's extremely stressful. So euthanasia is, a lot of folks have the mistaken impression that euthanasia is something that's terrible. Euthanasia simply means a good death. You're ending the suffering, be it suffering from your wounds or suffering from life in captivity and the stressors all therein.
I imagine you have a wide variety of reactions when animals come to the facility.
Yes. Yes.
Is there a typical pattern, like the five stages of mourning? Are you able to observe some commonalities?
Between myself or my rescuers the animals?
I was thinking mostly of the animals and how they react, but you know, that's a good question too about how you and the rescuers respond.
Right. Well, when an animal comes in, I try and implement not only regular medical attention, but I also try to implement herbal and homeopathic remedies. So I try and cover all the bases to ease with the emotional stress, the physical stress, all those levels. Mm-hmm. You try and emulate as best you can what they're going to see or experience in nature. Just try and reduce those factors. Mm-hmm. As far as the volunteers and myself, it is... some of the animals you get closer to than the others. Some of the animals, when they come in, you've done everything, you know, you just continue to tell yourself you've done everything you can do. You know, what else could I do? And then you use that animal to learn from so that you can help another animal. I'd say the saddest situations that I receive, the ones that make me very angry, are the ones where these wonderfully compassionate people pick up an animal and then they proceed to keep that animal for days, weeks, or months before they bring it to us. And then they want us to come up with a miracle out of our back pocket to save this animal that is now beyond saving.
That must be hard.
Those are the most difficult to swallow.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that there can be places for birds, raptors, if they're no longer to go back to the wild. And it sounds like that's not the case for mammals. There's nowhere, there's not like a zoo or a... there's not an alternative at this time?
Because I do have the background as a zookeeper, I'm familiar with where they get their animals. And where a zoo gets their animals, it's a very controlled setup. Everything is documented. Where every animal came from is very documented. And it's the zoo setting anymore, for the most part, is all maintained in captive animals. So those captive animals come from point A to point B, and everybody knows where those animals came from. It's almost like a big family tree in the zoo field. So if you were to introduce a foreign strain, which would be a wild animal, you don't have anything about that background. You have nothing about the disease factors that may be potentially carrying. You have no history whatsoever. And the zoos, they're just not set up to be able to receive those animals. And again, it kind of goes back to that whole stressor thing. So it is sad and unfortunate. But that's the reality.
And so your animals don't have that pedigree necessarily. They're coming from individuals who call in. Is it only individuals who are contacting you, or do the agencies sometimes call you, or are they simply referring individuals to you? Where do you generally get the animals from?
The majority of our phone calls, and we receive, last year I believe received over 400 phone calls. I haven't been able to count this year. I think we're around 300 phone calls so far this year. But the majority of our phone calls do come from individuals. You know, this wonderful caring community that, hey, there's a little bird in my backyard. Or what, my cat just brought in a squirrel. Oh, I was driving down the highway and this great horned owl was on the road. These wonderful people stop, take the time, they alter their schedules and to help this animal, because they too believe what we believe is that we want to keep North Idaho wild.
Hmm. And you've mentioned that a live trap is not a humane way to capture an animal, but you must get people that are being bothered, of course.
Yes.
You've begun to mention that. And so you do and you can counsel them on how to help the nuisance and without trapping or shooting things or anything like
Correct.
That.
Correct, yes. On our website, we do have, our website is a plethora of information. We do have a tab on there that if you click that tab, it will take you to a document that says, okay, these are the animals that I'm having problems with, and they will give you tips and pointers how to humanely evict them. We also have a PowerPoint presentation that we can offer to the community or to that individual, preferably, you know, like at the library setting, so that many people can learn and glean information from on how to safely evict that animal, which means, all right, I'm going to make this little portion of your habitat so unbearable that you have to move on, you know, like the annoying neighbor. That's exactly what we want you to be.
And what's that web address?
Is ahwf.org. So just the acronym for American Heritage Wildlife Foundation.
That's
or you can
one.
Just call us at 208-266-1488 and we will send you out that information.
Okay.
So on the release, you mentioned some of the challenges of location and all. How do you go about release? How do you determine when it's right to do that? And how do you go about the release?
Well,
do you take them back to the if it's been a nuisance animal or was caught for some reason, you wouldn't take it back to the same yard, but a general locale?
That's where it really comes into communicating well with the rescuer, you know, getting explicit information where that rescuer got that animal, where they found that animal, the conditions where they found that animal. If the rescuer is very pleased to have that animal back onto their habitat, back into their neighborhood, that kind of a situation, and the neighborhood is indeed a safe neighborhood for that animal in the sense that it can find food, shelter, water, and maybe even the family unit is there, then absolutely it goes back to that area. If it is a nuisance animal, or the area is unsafe, like many of the coyote pups we've received were from areas that trapping was heavy. So obviously we can't take them back there. So then what we do, it makes it a little bit more challenging. You know, when you have raccoons come from an area, very urban area, you're not really comfortable returning the young back to that area. So it just makes it more challenging for our volunteers to really reach out into the community and identify places where those animals are going to find food, shelter, water, to the best of their ability and the best of their knowledge. Idaho State has additional regulations that predatory species, if it's released on private property, I also need written permission from that property owner. So there's a lot of regulations and guidelines and laws that have to be followed.
There's a lot more to the administrative side than probably most people imagine.
Yes, and that's one of the other reasons that rehabilitation should not be tried at home.
Yeah, well, that probably is a good moment to take a song break here. It's at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay. We're talking this morning with Kathleen St. Clair McGee from the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. We're going to listen to a little bit of the Steve Miller Band, fly like an eagle. Wouldn't we all like to do that?
Maybe not too.
Steve Miller, fly like an eagle, or a kestrel, or a quail, they fly too. Welcome back. We're 88.5 KRFY in Pendre. This morning we're talking with Kathleen St. Clair McGee and the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation about eagles, kestrels, and a whole plethora of other animals. One thing that we were talking about during the break here is we haven't touched on, how do you feed the animals? How do you provide for a diet that's as close to natural as possible?
It's a combination of trying to find all those native foods, all the wild foods that they would normally eat, but then also because of the professional journals and documents and the science of professional rehab that's come a long way in the last 20 years, you're able to come up with a lot of commercial diet mixtures that you're able to feed. And in general, our wildlife care budget is well over $10,000 a year. And that's exclusively provided by the community. There's no... If you were to look at the entire grant community, the grant funders, as a pie, take the animal portion of all those grants that are given out as one slice of pie, is the animal portion. Well, basically, one piece, one bite out of that one piece of pie actually goes towards your general operating budgets for these facilities. So less than 1% of all the animal grants that are out there actually for general operating. And general operating would be things such as feeding the wild animals. So we rely on our community a lot. A lot of times we have wonderful patrons that support us by the fishermen go out on the rivers. They catch all of the fish. They bring us the fish so we're able to feed. They go out, they catch crawfish for us. They possibly give us some of their wonderful huckleberries. So, yes, we have a lot of wonderful community folks.
It has to be a challenge, though. Feeding a coyote, the wild game, is one thing, but then the sense of predator...
Yes.
Prey relationship to the food they're eating is lacking.
Yes. Well, that's where, again, it comes in handy with the hunters in the area. And we are very much a proponent for sustenance hunters, that they will give us, say, some of the carcass or some of the meat, so that that animal now has the taste for that wild meat, because that animal needs to have that wild taste.
And that leads us into volunteering opportunities. Obviously, that's an opportunity to volunteer in order to help provide food for these rehabilitated and rehabilitating animals. But you have volunteer work beyond that, too. Why don't you tell us a bit about what the volunteers are doing and who's your core group, et cetera?
Well, our volunteers, all of our volunteers can find the information on our website at ahwf.org, or you can call us at 208-266-1488, and we'll be happy to get you that volunteer form. As far as the areas that you can help out at, there's some areas that people wouldn't normally think of or don't naturally think of as far as volunteering. You know, a lot of folks, oh, it's an animal facility, that means I got to go clean out animal cages. No, not really. There's so much more that goes into operating this 501c3 wildlife center. And so the things would be such as talking to folks at different public booths. We've set up at approximately, last year I think we had about 24 booths. Every year we establish with the public libraries, we do PowerPoint presentations on 24 different topics, wilderness topics, from cohabitation to individual species. So there's educational opportunities that you can reach out into the community. There are simple things like helping coordinate and organize fundraising events and activities. Those are some things. Writing newsletter articles, keeping our website updated, or posting on social media. So there's a lot of areas that folks might not necessarily think of when they think, I'm volunteering at an animal organization.
So they don't necessarily have to have expertise in wildlife rehab.
Correct.
Or necessarily be doing the grunt work, although some of that's nice too.
Yes, yes.
It takes a wide variety of volunteers.
Yes, takes an army.
And even picking up animals, I would think that you would need help delivering, transporting.
Excellent point. That is an excellent point. Yes, because we're located out in Clark Fork. So a lot of people don't have necessarily the opportunity or means to bring the animal from Sandpoint to our facility. And it's nice for me to grab my phone log of my listing of my volunteers. And several people on there said, oh, I can be an animal taxi. So I proceed to call up those folks and I say, we just had an animal brought into the vet clinic. Can you bring it to me or meet me partway? And if their schedule accommodates, then they're able to be my animal taxi. So there again is another way to be a volunteer, be a wildlife taxi for us.
Sure. And your the facility that you're in is expanding and you're growing and you've acquired land. But how is that going and what are the needs? What kind of needs are you looking for there? Donations, help, volunteer help?
All the above. It's we like to work with the individual. If the individual has the means to provide a small monthly contribution financially, then we'll work with you. If that individual only has the means to bring us their newspapers so that we can line our cages, we'll work with that individual. If that individual is not able to get out of the house but still wants to help, then sign up for the grocery store programs or the online shopping programs, that kind of a thing. If you have small children, then by all means, go ahead and check into our series of children's books that we have and get some of those for your kids.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the upcoming both educational and fundraising programs that you have. Tell us a little more what the fall holds.
Well, here tomorrow, actually, at Idaho Port Authority. It's a terrific local business. They've been so kind as to find us a brewery, Mother Earth Brewery, that is going to put on the Pints for a Cause fundraiser. And that's going to be at Idaho Port Authority, September 6th, starting at 5. And then on September 16th, we'll have our major fundraiser, which is our second annual comedy show and silent auction. That we bring in a professional comedian from Seattle for a one-hour show of clean comedy. We do provide appetizers, and that's at the Columbia Bank Building or Tango Cafe Building or Sandpoint Center is officially known. Tickets are $20, and they are found at several of the locations, several of the businesses in town. Sandpoint Chocolate Bear has the tickets, North Idaho Animal Hospital, Fry Creek Vet Clinic, Fiddlin' Reds Music, and even Evans Brothers has the tickets available. And again, they're $20. Some of the raffle items that we received are tickets for four to Disneyland, Silverwood tickets. We have an Xbox. We've got wonderful artworks from like Teresa Fisher. So we've got a lot of wonderful items that can be bid on the 16th at the Columbia Bank Building for the comedy show. On the 24th, we have the Adopt a Highway section, which twice a year we like to keep our section of Scenic Highway 200 clean and pristine. So the Adopt a Highway program, you can give us a call 208-266-1488 to sign up to help us clean up the highway. And then in October, again, this is our second year for partnering with Hickey Farms for the Scarecrow Contest. And that's just a fun way for individuals, organizations, businesses to show off their creative side.
So individuals bring their
scarecrows.
Their scarecrows.
Are there wildlife themes?
Actually, this year we're not going to do, we're just kind of throwing it out there again. Last year we threw it out there, kind of create whatever you wanted. And it was actually one of the schools in town that created some scarecrows. And the kids had a blast. One was a moose type and another one was a truly scarecrow. And they were voted upon very highly each week.
A fun project and a fun way to contribute.
Yes.
And folks can actually go on your website or look at your brochure and understand how much they would need to contribute in order to help an individual type of animal.
Right. A lot of folks don't realize the cost and expense too. So what? It's just a little robin, right? There's $200-$300 just for that little robin. Mm-hmm. And we believe, as do many folks up here, that every species is important. Every animal is valuable in that web of life.
Well, it is an interesting question because a lot of your predator animals are being cared for, as are the prey animals. And we all know that the prey animals have shorter lives, but it's good to know that they're all being cared for.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and people can become members as well in order to, that's one way of supporting the organization.
Absolutely. Yes. We do have differing levels of membership categories, and that those can be found on our website, or again, you can give us a call. Website's ahwf.org. And as far as the membership categories go, we've kind of come up with some fun categories. You know, if you can be just the individual moose, or you can be the wolf pack or grizzly bear, or we'll love you very much if you're a cougar. We even have some wolverine who are $5,000 contributions. So, yes, we love all of our supports. Even if it's only $10 every couple of months, we still love you and value you.
Wolverines, now they're a fairly rare animal.
They are.
You see a lot of probably the more common animals.
We've
talked about some, but how often do you end up handling something that's rare or out of its range or at the edge of its current range?
We was it, a few years ago, we did have a juvenile yellow-headed blackbird, and that was the first I had ever seen. And the juveniles look entirely different than the adults. So it took us a minute to try and scratch our head and identify and figure out. So it's, we do get some unusual ones that come through the door we've never seen, never had. There are other ones that, again, are pretty common. Unfortunately, we've seen several, like great blue herons. But every animal that comes in is a unique experience and opportunity, and that's where that professional network of rehabilitators, if it's an animal that's come in that you've never had before, never seen before, where do I even start? My reference library is huge, and I can also tap into that network of, okay, I just received this. What do I do?
We talked about the upcoming fundraising events, and you mentioned briefly some educational program you have coming up as well. Tell us a little more about that.
Yes. We received a grant for the Meet Your Neighbors educational opportunities, and some of our wonderful volunteers are coordinating with one of the senior centers here in town, and we are also right now opening the discussion with one of the elementary schools so that our volunteers can come out and provide these fun, interactive activities to the youth and to the community so they can experience wildlife in a new way.
Kathleen, do you have an outstanding need that you'd like to make a call out for folks to help you with?
Come on out to the comedy show and have a good laugh.
There you go. It's an easy way to help in a fun way.
Indeed.
We all need that. We're drawing a little close on time, but there is enough for some advice to listeners. You touched a little bit earlier on some general advice. Do you want to repeat that or go into greater detail on anything in specific?
Well, I would say as far as a general overview, if anybody in the community has any questions, go ahead and view our website, ahwf.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. We're always posting information about the current animals in care, the pictures of the current animals care, upcoming events, that kind of thing. You can certainly call us at 208-266-1488 for any questions you may have. If you do find an animal, just be kind and courteous, place it into a secure box, let it be calm and quiet, and then follow through.
Mm-hmm. And not always, those animals that seem alone aren't always abandoned. The baby fawn isn't necessarily abandoned by mother.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So observation might be your first line of defense. And are there animals that are most commonly mistaken for abandoned or injured that we should just sort of know, we should watch before we do anything? Are there some certain ones?
Well, Julie, you brought up a couple of good points. Yes, at American Heritage Wildlife Foundation, that's obviously the acronym AHWF, but I like to say that also that stands for be aware of your surroundings, hesitate before you approach any animal, watch for signs of distress, and then follow through by contacting appropriate authorities. Don't try and do the rehab yourself. So watching for signs of distress are going to be things like, is the animal bleeding? Are there parasites on that animal? Is that animal being very vocal? Those are some indicator signs that, okay, I do need to act. If you're not seeing any of those signs, just kind of hang back and watch, because in about an hour or so, the animal should have moved on if it's able.
That's some good basic advice.
That's really good advice. Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Kathleen.
Thank you for having me.
And if you missed any portion of the show and you would like to re-listen to it, we'll have it available as a podcast here at KRFY.org. If you're a fan of the Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday morning show and you're traveling, you can listen to us live streaming also at KRFY.org. This has been a wonderful morning. We're going to segue into our community calendar with a little bit of Steppenwolf. Steppenwolf, born to be wild. And isn't that what we all like, to be born to be wild and return to the wild if we needed rehab, right, Julie?
Perfect song for our topic today. And wasn't that a great interview with Kathleen?
Yeah, very informative. Lots of good information. If you enjoy the morning show and you want to get more good information, tune in tomorrow morning, Wednesday, September 6th, and join show host Chris Bessler. He'll sit down with Mayor Shelby Rogstad to discuss all things City of Sandpoint, city happenings, upcoming city council election streets, a memorial field update, and other topics of interest. That's at 8 a.m. right here at 88.5 KRFY. And on Thursday, join morning show hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson. Their guests this week will be Robert Moore, director of War of the Worlds. That's also at 8 a.m. right here at 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio.
Yes, and next week Phil's not going to be joining us, but we'll be talking about local sustainable food and producers of same. We'll be talking with Paul Herndon from Pleasant Meadow Creamery, Diane Green of Green Tree Naturals, and Ann of Pack River Farms. Should be a great show.
Yeah, I wish I were here. It sounds like a great show, but we're going to be off backpacking in Nevada for a couple weeks.
Good for you all.
And coming up this week, we've got a number of things going on. Of course, as we mentioned with Kathleen, we've got the Pints for a Cause tomorrow night at Idaho Poor Authority, which will benefit the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. Always a good way to go.
That's right. And for those of you who like to get in a movie during the hot weather and the haze, the 7th through the 10th, we'll be able to view An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power. That'll be at the Panada going on this weekend.
Yeah, and very interesting. On the 7th, a complimentary bourbon tasting. It says here, by Act of Congress, September is National Bourbon Heritage Month. Who knew?
Act of Congress.
An Act of Congress, September is National Bourbon Heritage Month, an observance in the U.S. that calls for celebration of bourbon as America's native spirit. Join Dean O. from Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits as he pours complimentary tastes of some of America's top bourbons from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
All right, that sounds good. And then for those of you who want to get out and watch something athletic, from the 8th to the 10th, you can view the Ponderay Cup. That's in Sandpoint. They're hosting the regional Ponderay Cup soccer tournaments.
So on the 9th, probably very important for a lot of people, Bonner County Citizens Preparedness Expo. Are you prepared for an emergency, Julie?
Sort of.
Natural disaster?
Not really.
Severe climate weather conditions?
Oof.
Okay, so it sounds like this is the event for you. Attend the second annual Bonner County Citizens Preparedness Expo from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Bonner County Fairgrounds at 4203 North Boyer Avenue. There'll be workshops all day featuring tips, talks, vendors, and displays on food and water storage, alternative energy, secure homes, go bags, emergency communication, wilderness first aid, types of emergencies to be ready for, safe gatherings, essential oils, and more. Sounds like a busy, busy day.
Sure does.
For more information, call Penny at 208-946-3692. Well, we're running a little short on time here, but we do have time for a couple more of announcements, if you'd like, Julie.
Phil, do you know what a cornhole championship is?
I'm not sure I want to.
Me either, but it can be observed at McDuff's on the 9th. So for those of you who want to watch that tournament, I think it involves some tossing for those who are worried. Do that over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, practice your cornhole.
Oh. And then the 11th through the 16th, if you're interested, the Wackenold Ride? That's Tour Two States and One Province on the 9th Avenue, 9th Annual, 350-mile or 560-kilometer. It must be Wackened. Yes.
Washington, Canada, Idaho, part of the International Selkirk Loop, which goes all around the Selkirks in the two states and the province.
A long ride. That's a very long ride. Good luck to folks on that.
That would be a very ambitious ride. How many days is that, does it say?
Doesn't say, but I hope it's several. Sounds awful.
Multiple days. And then, of course, coming up on the 16th, we have the benefit that we spoke about earlier for the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation at the Columbia Bank, soon to be probably renamed something else. But it would be a wonderful evening. Come out and support the cause. Listen to some good, clean comedy.
Yes.
And support the community.
With comedian Brad Upton, for those of you who know him.
Okay, well, the month will be moving along. September always brings us the Scenic Half, presented by the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. This 9th annual event features a half marathon and a 10K fun run. The half marathon begins at 8 a.m. and the 10K at 8:15. You can learn more at scenichalf.com, or you can call the chamber at 208-263-2161.
And for those of you who appreciate Winter Ridge, they are an underwriter here at the station. They are having their customer appreciation party on the 17th. So run in there if you've got a moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're about out of time, and we would be remiss to not note the passing of Walter Becker on Sunday, one of the founding and mainstay members of the group Steely Dan. Died early at age 67 of causes that weren't revealed. He and his partner Donald Fagen teamed up over the years to produce some wonderful music that in many ways defined the 70s, and for some of us, defined the period in which we grew up. So we'd like to go out today with a